Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to 2024. Woo-hoo! And the Invested Podcast.
Woo-hoo!
We are just sort of amazed we're here. It's been that many years. How many years, actually? Eight?
I think we decided it was eight a while ago.
Yeah. It's been that is really amazing.
Crazy.
So into our ninth year now of this simple process of investing.
The simple process of investing.
If we'd started out snowboarding, we'd be really good at it by now. Right? So you guys are probably really good at investing by now. So
are you really good at investing by now?
Oh yeah, I'm pretty good.
Okay.
I have to say.
Good.
I am pretty good. The funds that I run are doing really well. We're either number one or number two in our category over the last year and three years.
Awesome.
Which is great.
And we're
in a
really
category
great.
That's got $36 billion being invested in it.
So, nice.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good at it.
Well,
whatever.
I think, I'm sure I've said this before.
I should probably do all the SEC disclosures right there.
Yeah, you definitely should.
This is the past results do not predict the future results. You don't know what's going to happen. Investing is dangerous. Don't put your money into anything.
That's true.
Yeah. If you don't know what you're doing absolutely on your own, then you should ask a really good investment advisor if you can find one to talk to you.
Definitely ask them.
Yeah, you should ask them. And they will tell you, diversify your portfolio across a gazillion stocks in order to protect yourself from the vicissitudes of the market.
That's or they might tell you something else. Who knows?
No, they won't.
But the point here is get advice, be wary, watch out that anything you put your money in, no matter how confident you are about it, could go to zero, and generally buyer beware.
Yeah. And if you do this investing long enough, you will put your money into something that goes to zero. Ask me how I know.
How do you know?
In 40 years, I had one do it. And it's really, really irritating.
If
you put your money into something and you really believe in people and they take it to zero, they rip you off. But it happens occasionally. So, yeah, you could lose all your money. It definitely can if you don't pay attention to the rules of investing. And then really, there's two sets of rules, I think, Danielle. There's the set of rules for people who don't know how to invest. And those are the rules that Warren Buffett gives you, which the rule is, put your money in the S&P 500 index and forget about it. And just keep putting it in there. And over a lifetime of investing, and I agree with this, you will come out well. You're going to do well. Trust in America.
Yeah.
It's a good country. It's going to continue to grow. And that has worked really well for a long, long time. That's if you don't know anything. If you don't know anything and you ask an advisor what you should do, they are going to give you some version of that. Almost certainly, they're going to give you some version of that, except it won't be the S&P 500 because then they won't earn their commission or their fee of 1% per year. They will just simply advise you to diversify across a lot of different companies, that you shouldn't be buying anything in any one company because it's too risky. And I'm always fascinated by that because it really protects the advisor. It doesn't protect the investor. It protects the advisor. This kind of language that they give you to diversify is understood by the SEC to be sober and conservative. And if the advisor uses that language, they will be protected from a lawsuit, even if they lose your money. So if the market goes down 30% 5 years in a row, you know, you're in the middle of a depression. The market, so let's say the market does 1932 level of stuff, 30, 31, 32. Goes down 90%. You've lost virtually all your money. You take your money out and you sue the advisor for giving you such horrible advice. Mm-hmm. And you won't get anywhere because the advisor followed the rules according to the SEC.
Yeah. And you're making it sound like that's dumb, but I mean, there are good reasons that that is the advice the SEC wants given out. And that is that most people, including professional investors, don't know much about what they're putting their money in. They don't know much about the companies that they're choosing. And that's because that's not their strategy. That's not their method. So they take this, tell me if what I'm saying here is wrong, but they generally take this diversified methodology on the theory that nobody can know enough about a given company to just invest in a couple of them, that that would be way too dangerous. So therefore, buying multiple protects you, which isn't dumb. It's a theory to go by. But the statistics show that it pretty much either matches the market or tends to be a little bit lower.
Yeah, that's right. And if you don't know anything, then that's what you should do, honestly.
Yeah, and there's a reason that Buffett recommends that, and not because Buffett doesn't know what he's talking about. He recommends, first of all, he doesn't recommend putting stuff in a fund, a mutual fund or whatever, that's ultra diversified and that charges fees. He recommends that you buy the S&P, essentially. And I think it's important to be really clear that that is an investment in the country, in the stock market that you're choosing. So you could buy like the market index of the French market, the Euronext, or you could buy the market index in London, or you could buy the market index in New York, or you could buy the market index in your own country. These are all investments in the future of that country and in the businesses of that country. And I just think being clear about, it's not just like a default, oh, I buy this thing and I don't really know what I'm buying. Like, that is an investment and it is a bet on the future. And I think being aware of that is really important. And that's why when Buffett gives that advice, he talks so much about how he has confidence in the future of American business and that he thinks it will be worth more in 50 years than it is today.
You know, since people are listening to this podcast from all over the world, maybe we should just say a couple things about that.
Sure.
Why Buffett would think investing in America is investing in a good bet on the future? And if you were to compare, let's say, two countries which have enormous natural resources and good weather and water and all the things that go toward, you know, making it easier for the country to be a successful country, and you compare the U.S. with, let's say, Argentina, mm-hmm. which in 1920 was one of the top 10 gross domestic product countries in the world.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was right up at the top. And the only real difference between Argentina and America is in the structure of their politics. You know, what kind of political system are they using? What kind of economic system? Economic/political system.
Yeah, well,
system
it's
like
and currency and world power too.
Well, not from 1920.
Not from 1920?
Yeah. So if you were to take the two countries in 1920, both of them in the top 10, and say, you know, where will they be in 2020, mm-hmm. you know, 100 years later, I don't know that you would have bet that Argentina wouldn't have continued to do well.
Hmm. Okay.
But what happened is in the 30s, they started into a kind of protectionist, not nationalist borders, but the right word is a welfare state. One where the government becomes more and more in charge of the success of companies and gets more and more I don't know, buddy buddy, or with the labor unions, and essentially is trying to do the things that populist do the things that are popular politically, where they're telling the mass of people that we're going to help you out, we're going to make life easier on you, and ultimately that turns into a broad fascist system, whether you're, you know, you call it communism like in China, or whether you call it fascism like in Italy in the 1930s. You have a system that's being run from the top down, and ultimately you end up having trained the people in the country to basically expect that the government is going to be there to help you out. And
I'm just going to
say the impact has been horrendous.
I don't know the history of Argentina, so I'm going to, anybody who's like yelling at us right now that maybe that's totally wrong. Unfortunately, I have no idea. So I'm going to go with what you're saying. I do have a good friend who's from Argentina, and I kind of want to get him on here and have him tell us what happened.
Well, right now they're going into a huge crisis, and they've just elected a very conservative guy who has been saying that we have to cut the size of government, we have to get our currency to be stable, we're going to link the currency to the dollar so that we can no longer just have our central bank just print whatever it wants to print to meet government obligations. So he's really got elected by 54% plurality.
Wow, you've really been following this.
Well, it's a pretty interesting political story because he's going to fail. And it's going to be horrendous in Argentina. And the reason he's going to fail is because...
This is your opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is because he has a very, very small percentage of this. His party only has like 25% of the seats in their government. And
is that a majority, though?
No. 75% of the government hates him for one reason or another. Either they're a labor union party or a socialist party or some kind of party that wants to continue to promote policies to the public that are impossible to pay for. And well, those parties hate him.
Usually what happens in a parliamentary system is that in order to create a voting majority, the...
Yeah, I don't know if it's parliamentary. I don't know what kind of... I honestly don't know if they have a parliamentary system or not. Because I don't think he'd been elected if he's only got that small number of seats. He would have had to rely on a whole bunch of other... He just got popularly elected.
Oh, so maybe they have a sub. Well, here we are again talking about something we know nothing about.
Except we know this.
Okay.
We know this. Argentina is a train wreck of an economy.
So tell
me. Argentinians will tell you that.
Tell me what
the difference is.
Yeah, the difference
here's my
as far
point,
as investing.
Is that,
yeah.
Argentina has great natural resources.
Incredible.
So if I mean, look at that compared to Singapore, which has one port. That's it.
Yeah.
And yet Singapore is in the top five of GDP. And here's Argentina just tanking. I think they're way down the list right now. 40% unemployment, their currency, they're having 200% inflation. It's a nightmare down there. And you just compare that with an island that has nothing and is surrounded by enemies to Argentina, which has everything. And what's the difference, right? And it's what the people have been demanding from their government. It's like, that's just what it all boils down
to. So are you saying look at the overriding political system when thinking about which stock market to invest in?
Exactly. Look at where that country's going.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what political system is there. Now, if you want to bet on America, then in a sense, you sort of have to bet that we won't go into that extreme kind of, I don't know, it's sort of fascist government. One that tries to provide everything for the people. And then you look at what we've actually done. This is the part that's scary. Is you look at what's actually happened in America, and you'll see that we have obligations to Medicare and Social Security that can't possibly be met under the system we have right now. So this is going the way of Argentina, where your politicians are making promises they can't keep.
Do you think then that Buffett's statement that he thinks America's still a good bet is, do you not agree with that?
I think America's still a good bet from Warren's perspective, because he's seen how America corrects itself from its excesses on political parties. The question is, can we continue to do so in the future? Mm-hmm. Right? That's the tough part right now. We've got an election coming up that could divide the country enormously between the Republicans and the Democrats. And both parties, there are really good people in both parties who truly believe that the election of the other party will be the destruction of the country.
Yeah. This is where I struggle with the advice, honestly, to buy a market index. It's easily said and it's easily done, and I understand why that advice is given for people who truly don't have time or interest in learning about companies or investing. But everyone listening to us now is interested in companies and investing, or is trying to decide if they are interested. And for me, it just seems easier to predict, to learn about a given company and attempt to predict its future or my confidence in its future, than it is to predict a country and my confidence in the future of a country. Like, to me, it's smaller. It's more defined. I have more information. It just, to me, it seems easier. And I did not feel that way, of course, when I first started learning this from you. It felt completely overwhelming. But frankly, like, with a bit of enjoyable research, it becomes easier than deciding if I like the future of the US or the future of the UK or the future of Argentina.
Well, I'm with you 100%. I mean, that I would say that what's going on politically and economically in a country is important. It's important to understand, because it's the weather your company is dealing with. It's the weather. Like, so if you're out there in a hurricane, you're going to have some rough years. But we look at companies in Argentina, I mean, now. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. We look at companies in Turkey. We look at companies in India. We did look at companies in China. We've decided China has now put itself so much at risk of a completely fascist government that's
a great example. China's a great example. I mean, the Chinese companies have been top of the news for U.S. investors for a number of years now. To the point where people are like desperately trying to figure out how to buy shares in these companies. And without a lot of talk about, I love that you said the weather, that's a great way to put it, the weather that these companies were living in. Except just sort of a general like sense that China understood that having a capitalist market economy, at least as far as public companies, seemed to be good for it. But with the about face that's been happening, I think people who didn't really think too much about that are starting to say like, oh, right, the weather really matters. The political weather, the market economy weather really, really affects my investment. It's just something that for, I would say, European and American and Canadian and Australian companies, we just don't think that much about. And I do think it's an important thing to put on the checklist.
So I mean, one of the nice things about looking at the economy and the politics as weather pattern is that you'll get a very big advance notice. Like, you know, you could see China making the change. Well, when it made the change, it was rather sudden and an abrupt change, but you could get out of companies that were there without damaging too much your portfolio. Hmm. So I think the same thing would happen in the United States or in Canada. If the U.S. just goes the direction of Argentina and continues to have to print money, like this year we're printing $2 trillion, which doesn't... This is crazy. It doesn't sound like much. Oh, we're only printing 2 trillion. Mm-hmm. We're printing about 10% of all of the money that's ever been printed in the history of the country just Jeez. This year. So okay. you just kind of think, well, okay, maybe that's a little bigger than I thought. And that's going to have an impact. And so here you have this ongoing problem of required payments. I mean, they're not going to cut out Medicare, right? I mean, if anything, they're going to go for a universal health care of some sort. And in America, it just costs like twice as much as any other country. It's just very, very expensive. And then we have all the Social Security payment, and that runs out of money, I think, in 2034, something like that, 2032. Mm-hmm. It's out of money and has to take money from the general taxes to a certain degree. So, you know, we're headed down this road that you can't stay on, and yet the politicians, no politician can try to get off of it.
You know,
it won't be elected.
It reminds me so much of one of the first case studies you told me about, or I guess you told everybody about in your book, Rule Number One, about General Motors, which seemed, if I remember right, seemed to have really good economic numbers, or at least pretty good economic numbers. Like, it wasn't terrible, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem was that they had these pension obligations, and those pension obligations were relatively ignored by most investors. It was just sort of like kicking the can down the road. That's a thing, but we don't really talk about it or look at it. And right. it eventually, obviously, sunk the company in a really dramatic way.
Right.
So, yeah, there's those.
But you could see it. You could see it coming from a long
way out. Well,
that's
right. That's what I'm saying, is you saw it yeah. coming. Maybe you can tell everybody the story, because probably people have forgotten.
Well, I think the main thing I saw.
Well, just about was the lady that was in
yeah.
the car with you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was taking this friend of mine's friend, who's in her 80s, to his birthday party, and picked her up at the assisted living home. And she was a pretty cool lady. And this is in Jackson Hole. And she and I were talking, you know, about what I do. And then she said, oh, she's an investor, and she invests in General Motors. And I said, oh, very interesting. Because I, at the point in time, had written how bad General Motors was as an investment. Hmm. I said, so why do you like that? And she said, whoa, my husband, you know, told me that this is the best company in the world and I should never sell that stock. Hmm. And what got me was that it was paying a dividend, and this is how her husband judged that it was the best company in the world.
I forgot about the dividend part of it. Yeah.
And she was judging that it was still good because it was still paying a dividend and had increased the dividend as it had every year.
Yes, that's right. They had increased the dividend every year, which yep. she took as information that the company was doing well.
Right, exactly. And what I knew was that they were borrowing all of the money to pay the dividend. And so they were cheating in order to keep people owning the stock. Mm. And ultimately that lack of integrity, you know, caused them to go down. Or it's one of the main things that I think caused them to go down is the lack of integrity in the management team. Mm-hmm. They were just simply unwilling to deal with reality, and wanted to, as you say, kick the can down the road to the next management team. And this is unfortunately what we see in corporations all the time, maybe more so now than ever, as we are going into a new AI revolution, artificial intelligence revolution. Mm-hmm. Companies are going to get left behind. And when they do, the management teams are going to try to kick the can. They mm-hmm. are not going to own up to having made mistakes and not being on top of the thing. So, and the reason is really obvious, is because they make so much money now as a CEO that if you can stick around an extra year or so, you're making an extra 10, 15, 20 million.
Totally. And vesting your stock, which you're getting paid as a huge part of your compensation package.
Right. Protecting that till you can get out. Uh-huh. I mean,
it's,
you know,
such
these
a messed
things
up incentive
together.
Program. It's so messed up.
God, these boards of directors have screwed the shareholders and changed the incentives of these companies so dramatically ever since the unintended consequences of Bill Clinton's administration pushing through a law to force companies to not pay their executives so much. Mm-hmm. Like anything over $1 million was no longer tax deductible. And it shifted companies over to an incentive system involving the stock.
It shifted them to stock, which sounds good. It sounds good. Have your compensation linked to the performance of the company. It sounds good. But what it does in reality, because executives are not there for 50 years, and therefore they don't care so much about the long-term success of the stock. They're looking at how do I pump it up over the next 5 years, and then I'm out.
Yes, 100% right. So they've got the incentives all screwed up. And now, as a result of that opportunity, the corporate boards bring in consultants to tell them that, you know, if you're at Coca-Cola, you can get paid more because they're paying more at Pepsi.
And which isn't wrong. It's not wrong. They can get paid more at Pepsi. But it's making this market of CEOs sort of like internally pump up their own compensation.
Oh, my God.
So all of this leads me actually perfectly to what I would like to do as a little series for us. Talking about how to get into the kind of periphery of a company. So one thing that I get asked a lot and I struggle with is like, okay, here's Lululemon, a company that I'm familiar with, that I shop at, that I feel very comfortable understanding, that I've done the research on, and I like it, let's say. I'm not saying I actually do. I'm just saying let's say. But I do feel comfortable with Lululemon and feel comfortable in Lululemon. Fine. Nothing? Fine.
That's pretty funny.
Thank you. So then what happens is I start thinking about, as you put it brilliantly, the weather. What is the climate that this company is in? And how much do I need to know about it? I think that's the main question I have. How much do I need to know about it? So there's a number of levels, or like kind of concentric circles around any given company. So you can go to like direct competitors, like very similar other companies, and then generally the industry competitors, and then the sector, or is it the sector and then the industry? I always forget. And then the country that it's in, or if it's an international company, the multiple countries that it's in, and then the stock market that it trades on, and then like the world, you know, like you can just go out so much. And after a while, I sort of get my head spinning and going like, how much time should I be putting into this stuff? On the one hand, maybe just go for it, and then I kind of have a lot of background knowledge I can apply to a lot of different companies. Or on the other hand, maybe that time is better spent looking at company number two that I'm also interested in. So regarding like allocation of focus and time, I think my question is, how do we sort that out? Like the kind of the edge of the company, or the edge of the circle of competence, maybe.
Yeah, I can.
Does that,
I can kind of,
does that long question make sense?
Tell you, yeah, I can kind of tell you what we do, and it's kind of a matrix, if you will, between how hard is it to understand all the things you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And how likely is it that we can actually buy this thing on sale?
Okay.
In other words, we could spend a lot of time on Lululemon. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
We spend a lot of time on Lululemon, but if it never goes on sale, maybe there's a better choice. Because it might be never when I can buy Lululemon.
What an odd answer. I would like to punt that until next episode.
Shall we? Shall we dive into that later?
Because I'm confused.
Sounds good. Okay. Very good. I always like to leave the podcast with you confused. That's great.
Because it's going to take a while to figure this out.
It might take a while.
I don't know what to call our theme here, but I think it's sort of like, let's call it the weather, because I really enjoy that concept.
Okay, we'll call it the weather.
Okay, so everybody who has no clue when to stop researching, this is the big question. When do you stop researching? Listen up.
Okay.
2024 invested.
We'll try to do that.
On it. I feel like my, like the guy providing the answers is less interested than I am. Maybe because it just comes naturally to you, but I don't know. I really struggle with when to stop researching.
I think if we look at it with this matrix of price value versus difficulty to understand the industry, we'll start getting someplace.
Okay,
so
cool.
Let's dive into that next time.
Okay, welcome to the new year, everybody, and thanks for dealing with our somewhat off schedule this week and over the holidays, and we will be back on time next week.
Time to get at it. Just go do
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, everybody.
We'll see you later.
Just go do it. Okay, bye.
Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important. It's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.